All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Chof Hey. We left off on Chof Dalid Amud Beis. So remember, we have a lot to do today. So the Gemara says, we left off with Hanitan Al Eshes Ish, right? No. No, we left off... Tanur Rabbanan, excuse me. So Chof Dalid Amud Beis, Tanur Rabbanan. It's a 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20 lines down from the top. So Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara says, Ein mekablin geir limosa mashiach. We do not accept converts in the Messianic era. Ki yotzei bo, similarly, lo kiblu geirim b'mei David lo b'mei Shlomo. They did not accept converts during the days of David, nor during the days of Shlomo. So we'll say, so why not? Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Mikra, what's the pasuk that tells us that we would not go ahead and accept converts during these times? Now, the common denominator between Yemos HaMashiach, Yemos David, Yemos Shlomo, is that these were times of incredible bracha, of incredible success for the Jewish people. So this seems to go back in line with what Rabbi Nechemiah said, that we do not accept Gerim if the conversion is for any ulterior motive. An ulterior motive might be any situation where we feel that the person may be converting because they feel that becoming Jewish gives them an upper hand in life. So therefore, again, all of these periods in time represents times of incredible success of the Jewish people. Therefore, it seems Rabbi Nechemiah would say that Lamaise, we won't accept Gerim. Now, again, interestingly enough, as much as we saw that the Rabbanan argued on Rabbi Nechemiah and said, Lamaise, even if the person converted, had an ulterior motive, the conversion is still good. Everyone seems to agree with these ideas, that in Yemos HaMashiach, there will be no converts. And we know historically that in the days of David and the days of Shlomo, they did not accept converts. So the Gemara says, why not? Mikra, what's the Pasuk? Because the Pasuk says again in Yeshaya, Hein Gor Yagor, FS MOC. Well, so the way we're translating this is, when they convert, they must do it without me. Migar itach alayich yipol. He who dwells with you ultimately again will share your portion, or will have the same portion fall to him. The idea is, what does it mean they have to convert when I'm not there? The idea ultimately is, Kadosh Baruch Hu says that conversion is only good at a time when Klal Yisrael, so to speak, is suffering, the absence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, it doesn't literally mean that Klal Yisrael is suffering, but it means is that conversion during times of prosperity, the Gemara says, is not valid conversion. All right, so the Gemara goes weiter. Hanitan al ish es ish. So remember again, the Mishnah said that if there are rumors about a man having a relationship with a married woman, a man having a relationship with a married woman, and then what happens? And then her husband divorces her. So the halach, and then again, the alleged adulterer goes ahead and marries her. The halach is that even though they married, we force them to divorce. We force the second couple, the ex-wife with her alleged adulterer, to go ahead and divorce. So Amarav, Rav said, we'll say it's a very dramatic Gemara, Amarav, ube'edim. What are we talking about over here? We're talking about over here where there were witnesses. And I will say, what does this mean there are witnesses? Rashi says, Hadisnan yotzi zeha chashud shekinsa, kigon sheba'u edim al kala rishon shera'uha shezinsa imo. We're talking about a case where witnesses showed up and they say, it's not just a rumor, but rather what? We actually saw that she committed adultery. And I will say, remember, just because they saw that she committed adultery doesn't mean that she's going to be put to death. Because remember, again, to be executed for the crime of adultery, there are many different things that you have to have hasra. You have to be warned, but Lamaise, if witnesses see that she committed adultery, that's enough to go ahead and dissolve her marriage. So the Gemara says, so Rav says again, Abosai, that the case over here is where what? There were rumors that a woman went ahead and committed adultery, we'll call it with Shimon. She was married to Reuven. Then what happens? So Reuven divorces her. She then goes ahead and marries Shimon. Witnesses come along and say, it's not just a rumor. We know that she had an affair with Shimon. So the Gemara, Rav therefore says, the Mishnah teaches us that she has to get divorced from Shimon. Amar Rav Sheshes, Abosai, listen to this. Rav Sheshes comes along and says, Amina, I think... Kinayim v'shachiv Rav Amar lahashmaisa. So I think Rav might have said what he said when he was half asleep, right? Right. That's right. So that's another way of saying that. I disagree. I disagree with Rav. Disanya, because we'll say, why do we say that? Disanya. Hanitan al ishes ish v'hotziuha al yado, if there were rumors that a woman committed adultery, and as a result, her husband divorced her, v'niskar shamitacha, so what happens? And then she went ahead and she married another guy. So remember again, she's married to Reuven. There's a rumor circulating that she had an affair with Shimon. As a result, Beis Din forced Reuven to divorce her. She married another guy, Levi. And then what happens? It didn't work out with Levi. So what happens? V'niskar shemitachas yidei acher. Imkines, if she then goes back and marries Shimon, right? The alleged adulterer, imkines, lo yotzi, if they got married. So this is now, remember, this is now marriage number three. So she was married to Reuven. Rumors of adultery, Beis Din forces him to go ahead and divorce her. She marries Levi, totally unrelated guy. Doesn't work out with Levi. After she gets divorced from Levi, she marries Shimon, the alleged adulterer. So what's the halacha? Imkines lo yotzi. They do not have to dissolve the marriage. Hey, chidami, so what's the case over here? If there are witnesses that showed up at some point in time and confirmed the fact that the rumor was true, that she had an affair with Shimon, who cares? What does it matter if she married Levi in the interim? Meaning it almost sounds like that what the Gemara is saying over here is that for some reason, her marriage to Levi, an unrelated guy, kind of like stops the whole cull, and she can go back and marry Shimon afterwards. But what's the case? If there are Edom that show up and confirm the fact that she didn't have an affair with Shimon, so let me mention one point, which I know you know, but we just should say it. Because remember, if a woman commits adultery, she's not only prohibited to her husband, but she's also usher to the man with whom she committed adultery. We call that usher lebal, husband, and leboel. So ultimately, if there are witnesses that come, she's not allowed to marry Shimon, who, and the fact that she's married to Levi in the interim makes absolutely no difference. El alav de leka edim. Rather, it must be that what? That there were no witnesses. V'tayma da'asa acher v'afseke l'kala. And the only reason in this case why the Brice allows her to remain married to Shimon is why? Because she was married to Levi in the interim. Her marriage to Levi essentially put an end to the rumor. The rumor's done. Now once the rumor's done, if she gets divorced from Levi, she can go in and she can marry Shimon. Ha'lav ha'chi. But were it not for this intervening marriage with Levi, mafkinon. You see that what? That we would go ahead and, meaning if she were to get divorced from Reuven and immediately afterwards marry Shimon, we would force her to go ahead. We would force Shimon to divorce her, even though what? Even though there are no Edim. That contradicts Rav. Amar lecha Rav. Rav says, no. Hu adin de afgav lo asa acher v'afseki l'kala. Rav says, not true. Even if there wasn't another marriage that came along and stopped the call, I still believe that, Amar l'charav, hu adin, da'afagav lo asa acher v'afseke l'kala. Sarav says, even though what? There wasn't an intervening marriage, i.e. to Levi, that put an end to the call. I'ika edim mafkinon. If there are witnesses that came along, ultimately, again, we would dissolve the marriage to Shimon. Ileka edim lo mafkinon. If there are no witnesses, we don't dissolve the marriage. So what is the marriage to Levi have to do with anything? V'achi kamar, da'af agav da'asa acher va'afseki l'kal l'chatchila lo yichnos. Rather, what it's coming to teach us is what Rabbo say, that l'maysa, if there is, even though there are no witnesses, if someone else goes ahead and marries her in the interim, l'chatchila, she should not marry Shimon. In other words, we'll say, what the Braisa is ultimately saying is like this, is that at the end of the day, halacha l'maysa, Rav would say, it's never a good idea for her to marry Shimon. That's the bottom line. Never a good idea for her to marry Shimon. Again, of course, if there are witnesses, of course, she may not marry Shimon. But even in the absence of witnesses, even in the presence of an intervening marriage, if there was a cult that ultimately adultery occurred, she should not marry this man l'chatchila. Again, according to Rav, the absence of witnesses, if they were to marry, would not force you to dissolve the marriage. Meisei, Gemara raises a kasha. B'medra amurim, when is this true? Meaning, when is what true? When is it true that if she marries Shimon, the alleged adulterer, that he has to divorce her? Kishain la banim. That's only true when what? When there were no children. Aval yesh la banim. But if there were children, lo teitzei. Then ultimately, she does not have to leave the marriage. Well, see, now take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, "B'medar mamurim, de'im kines hanitan yotzi, kishein labanim in arishon." When do we say that lamaisa? If the suspected adulterer, Shimon, marries the ex-wife, that he has to go ahead and divorce her, that's only when she doesn't have children from her first marriage. However, aval yesh labani, but if she has children from her first marriage, lo teitze, why rash, look at Rashi, min arishon lo teitze, dechi mafkila kamach sekina lakala kama, va'avdina lehu mamzerim. So we'll say this is very interesting. The concern is that if she married Shimon and now you make her go ahead and divorce Shimon, what does that look like? That looks like that lemaisa, she did commit adultery. If she committed adultery, then what does that do to her children from her first marriage? You run the risk of labeling them as mamzerim. Now, even if you do not officially say that they are mamzerim, the fact that you made her divorce Shimon seems to lend credence to the rumor. Lending credence to the rumor, by definition, well, some people will end up labeling the children. Vimbo eide tuma. But however, again, if witnesses show up and say that lemaisa, again, she did commit adultery, afilu yesh lakama banim, even if she has many children, teitze, she still has to go ahead and leave this second marriage. Rav mukila lemasni. Since Rav goes in and sets up our Mishnah, b'shiyesh labanim v'yesh laidim. So according to Rav, then again, the way to set up the case is where what? Is where lemaisa, again, she has children, but there are also witnesses. In that case, then no matter how many children, you still have to go ahead and leave the marriage. Umay duchke Rav la'okmi lemasnisim v'yesh labanim. So why does Rav have to set up the Mishnah like this? So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, why does Rav have to set up the Mishnah's case as where she has children and there are witnesses? And only if there are witnesses come do we dissolve the second marriage. If there are no witnesses, we don't. Look, well, why doesn't Rav just simply say, why doesn't Rav establish the case of where she does not have children? And therefore, again, you could easily say, you could set up the same case and say it's a case where she doesn't have children and there are no witnesses. Rava says, Masnisin Kashisa. Because according to Rava says, according to Rav, the Mishnah is problematic. Why? My irya detani hotzi uha. Why does the Mishnah have to say hotzi uha? They removed her. Now, they removed her sounds like what? They removed her means sounds like Beis Din did something. Beis Din forced the dissolution of the marriage. Listen, hotziya. Why doesn't it just say he divorced her? Ella kol hotzi uha be-Beis Din. Rather, it must be again, lashon of hotzi uha means that Beis Din did something. U Beis Din be-Edim hu de-Mafki. And I will say ultimately again, when does Beis Din act? Beis Din only acts if witnesses come along. V-Baisim. Therefore, again, that's why Rav feels compelled to set up the case as where there are witnesses to the actual adultery. V-Baisim. The other possibility is, Hani masnaisa Rebihi. That our Mishnah reflects the view of Rebbe. What does Rebbe say? Disanya. Well, it's actually a very interesting Gemara. This is, now we're going to get into situations of essentially strong circumstantial evidence that adultery occurred without actually seeing the act of adultery itself. Says the Gemara, disanya, because we learned Rochel Yotze, and I will say interestingly, Rochel is a perfume salesman. So the way it used to work is that, again, so the perfume salesman used to go door to door, going in and selling his wares. So what happens? A husband comes home, and what happens? The perfume salesman is leaving. The isha chogeres besinar. And as the perfume salesman is leaving, the woman is literally tying her undergarments. So look at Rashi. He says, Rochel Yotze, min abayis, umatza zeh esh. So the husband comes home. The perfume salesman is leaving the house. Matza zeh es ishto shi chogeres besinar. And he finds his wife tying her undergarments. Mechur hadavar. Yeah, it's funny if you're not the husband. Right. So it says, listen to this. So this, the Gemara calls this mechuar. This is something disgusting that ultimately, again, represents circumstantial evidence that adultery occurred. More than suspicious. This is more than suspicious. This is circumstantial evidence. Again, he did not go ahead and see the actual act of adultery, but the fact that the salesman is leaving and she's tying up her undergarments, obviously, more than doesn't look good. I will say again. Yeah, seriously, come on. More than doesn't look good. Again, it's strong circumstantial evidence that points in a particular direction. So the halacha is mechur hadavar. So Rebbe says, ever since there's something disgusting, meaning when he says something disgusting, means since this is strong indication that something disgusting slash illegal occurred, teitze. Ultimately, again, he should divorce his wife. Next case, rok lemala minakila. If he finds saliva, literally on the canopy of the bed. So interesting. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says rok lemala min akila. Same case. Arocha yotze. The perfume salesman is leaving the house. Umatza bal rok lemala begaga kila shem al mita. So mizara karok lemala ki ma shochevu part of lemala. So apparently, again, finding saliva on the canopy of the bed. So the assumption would be that the woman was underneath the man during relations, and ultimately, again, she spit or at some point in time. And that's the canopy underneath, that's the saliva underneath the canopy of the bed. Homer Rebbe says, Holu Mechur Hadavar, since again the matter is disgusting, Teitze, ultimately, again, this is grounds for dissolution of the marriage. Chaf Hei Amad Aleph, Menalim Hafuchim Tachas Hamita. It's another interesting case. Let's say again, he comes home and he finds that the perfume salesman's shoes are overturned, or I should say differently. This is not the perfume salesman. This is the husband comes home and he finds another man's shoes turned upside down underneath the bed. Now, what do turn upside down underneath the bed? Look at Rashi. He says, Simon Lamata, excuse me, Pihan Lamata, Vadai Shal Nochrihem, Vahachfu Kadesh Shalo Yaki Hara. So apparently, the way it works is for some reason, I guess, maybe it had to do with the nature of the shoes they wore, the dirt floors. If you had an easier time camouflaging your shoes, if they were turned over. So somebody would only turn over their shoes if they wanted to camouflage their shoes on the floor. So ultimately, again, he finds a pair of overturned shoes underneath his bed, which seems to indicate that somebody was there and did not want their shoes to be found. Amar Rebbe says, Hoil umachur hadavar teitze. Since this ultimately, again, is something disgusting, meaning indicates that something occurred, ultimately, Teitzei should divorce his wife. Mina'alim hafuchim. So in the case of the overturned shoes, lechzei demaninhu. Why don't you just go to find out whose shoes they are? Right? Meaning, I'm saying that, like there's a way to, in the other cases, Rabosai, you see, in the other cases, there's circumstantial evidence, and there's no way to be mevara. There's no way really to find out any more information. But in the case of the overturned shoes, why don't you see whose shoes they are? Rather, the case over here is not where you actually found shoes, but what? But Lamaisa, what you saw, I guess you were able to see this on a dirt floor, right? The compressions, right. You were able to go ahead and see that somebody had overturned their shoes on the floor. So Amrabi. So Rabbi says, Hoil Mukhur Hadavar Teitse. So Rabbi said, since the matter is disgusting, ultimately again, they must divorce. Okay, Behilchasa. So now the Gemara says the halacha follows Rav, and the halacha follows Rebbe. Then I will say, now obviously, again, this seems to be, the Gemara says, kasha hilchasa hilchasa. Now remember, again, both Rav and Rebbe say two different things. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says hilchasa kavase derav, the amra in machzikin kala ela be'idim. So I will say, on one hand, Rav said that the only time a rumor has any validity is when it's backed up by testimony, which I will say is ultimately another way of saying that we don't really give much credence to rumors. The only time we begin to take rumors seriously is when it's no longer a rumor, and ultimately there are witnesses that are willing to attest to the fact that something actually occurred. So on one hand, the Gemara is saying that the halacha follows Rav. That's Rav's position, that the man only has to divorce his wife, not regarding the rumors, but only again if witnesses show up. And again, if she were to marry the alleged adulterer, the only time he has to divorce her is lemaisa again if witnesses come along and back up the call, back up the rumor. But then he also says, halacha follows Rebbe. I will say, so remember again, Rebbe was the one who just said over here, these are all Rebbe. Rebbe was the one who said that in all the circumstantial cases, even though there are no witnesses. Remember, let's say, we just read three cases with the perfumes, two with the perfume sales and one with the shoes. So in all three of those cases, what's the common denominator? There are no witnesses. There's no hard evidence. But ultimately, again, we have circumstantial evidence. And yet Rebbe said, based on that, you still have to divorce her. So the Gemara says, Kash hilchasa hilchasa. How can you say that halacha follows Rebbe and that halacha follows Rav? To which the Gemara says something very interesting. Lo kasha, habikala de pasik, habikala de lo pasik. One is talking about a rumor that endures. One is talking about a rumor that does not endure. What does that mean? Kala, excuse me, kala dilo pasik, kala dilo pasik veleka edim. If there is a rumor, that does not stop, meaning it persists, and there are no witnesses, then what? Kerebi. We paskin like Rebbe, namely what Rabbo say, that Allah lamaisa, we will lend validity to that rumor if the rumor does not stop. The Allah operates with the idea that if a rumor is false, at some point in time it will die down. We'll discuss how long. If it doesn't die down, then lamaisa, again, we have to accept that there may be some validity to it. So therefore, again, if the rumor persists, even if there are no witnesses, we'll paskin like Rebbe, and we will cause the dissolution of the marriage based on rumor. However, again, kala depasik v'ika edim, but if there's a rumor, and the rumor dies down, but what? But there are witnesses that come forward, then kirav, then ultimately we will paskin like Rav and say that what? That the arrival of the witnesses confirms the rumor beforehand, even though the rumor has subsequently died down, and therefore again we'll act accordingly. So the Gemara says, okay, v'kala de lo pasik ad kama. When we say that a rumor, so Rabbi said, what the Gemara just said is something very interesting, that the halacha is that if a rumor persists, the rumor persists for a significant amount of time, then lemaisa, we lend some level of credence and we take action based on it. So the Gemara says, what is the definition of a persistent rumor? Amr Abayi said, Amri li aim, my mother told me that the definition of a persistent rumor is domi demasa yoma upalga. Literally, we'll say domi demasa means the people who they talk about in the city. So again, those rumors persist for a day and a half. Also what that means is, if it's non-stop talk for a day and a half, meaning it's the talk that everybody's talking about for a day and a half, then lemais, again, that is called a persistent rumor. Now, obviously, statements like this are very dangerous because rumors start all of the time. And if you're going to tell me now that a rumor that persists for a day and a half suddenly takes on some level of halachic truths, now the Gemara qualifies this. Below Amran, Ela de la pasik beni ubeni. That means, by the way, that the rumor is spoken about straight for a day and a half. No other information is spoken about except that rumor. This becomes the headlines for an entire day and a half. Ava pasik beni beni. But if there was a break in the perpetuation of the rumor, so the Gemara says ha pasak. Ultimately, again, that is not called a persistent rumor. Furthermore, velo amran ela de la pasik mach masira. Furthermore, the only time that if there is a break and the perpetuation of the rumor over the day and a half that is considered to be a break is if the people who the rumor, let me say it differently, is if it didn't stop because people were afraid to talk about the people who are the subject of the rumor. But if people are afraid to speak about the people who are the subject of the rumor, let's say because they're powerful or they could exact revenge, then Lamai said that's not called a break in the rumor. Ava posek mach masira. But if the rumor stopped because the people were fearful of the individuals who are the subject of the rumor, then mach masiruhu. Below Amran, ela deleka ayin. I both said this is perhaps the most important qualification. When a rumor is true, that's only in a situation where a person doesn't have enemies. Aval ika oivim. But if a person has enemies, oivim hu daafkule lekala, then it's quite possible that what? That one's enemies planted the seed for the rumor. So we'll say, if you think about it, by the way, really what comes out is you're going to be very hard-pressed to ever find a real case of where we're going to be able to take, solid halachic action based on the rumor. Because again, you have all of these qualifications, but again, should the rumor conform to all of these details, then ein achinami, we would, under certain circumstances, take valid halachic action as a result of the rumor. Tanan hasam. We learn there, Hamotzias ishto mishum shemra. If a person goes ahead and divorces his wife because of shemra, now I will say shemra means, if you look at Rashi, mishum shemra, it's almost right across in Rashi, shiyatsa aleha, she has a bad name that went out about her. I will say, so again, the simplest case would be, there are rumors that she committed adultery, no witnesses, not even a kala de pasik necessarily, not even a kala de lo pasik, not even necessarily a sustained rumor, because if there's a sustained rumor, he would be obligated to divorce her anyway. But rather, again, it's just bad name that has gone out about her. So the halacha is lo yachzer. If he divorces her, he may not go ahead and remarry her. Now look at Rashi. Rashi says she yetsa lo yachzer ki the precious time. Shematinasi laacher the yatsa kol ala lazharishon shesheker haya the ischare tamegari shiur ila hayis yodei shekinah. So we'll listen to this. So what's the concern? We'll see this in Gittin. The concern is fascinating. So Reuven divorces Leah. Yaakov divorces Leah because there's a bad name that goes out about her, that she's an unfaithful wife. What happens? He divorces her. She marries Reuven. She marries Reuven. They're very happily married. Then what happens? Yaakov finds out a while later that she had a certain enemy who was perpetuating this rumor. And Yaakov says to himself, "Oh, had I known that the rumor was not true, I would have never divorced Leah. Now, I will say, from a get perspective, that is highly problematic. Why? Because there is the concept, according to some, of the ability for a husband to be mevatel a get lamafreya. A husband to be able to go ahead and negate the effectiveness of a get retroactively, which means now that if Leah is remarried and has children, and husband number one retroactively voids the get, then what occurs? Children are mamzerim. So therefore, again, what we do is when Reuven divorces Leah, essentially we say, listen, if you do this, if you pull the trigger on this, just understand you waive all rights. You waive all rights to ever go ahead and retroactively invalidate the get. By the way, you should know, we actually do this today in Gittin as well. When we give a get, we tell a husband that even should you discover new information that would change your mind about your decision now, your decision is binding, and you waive any rights. You waive any and all rights to in any way negate this get. And once a husband waives those rights, they're gone. So therefore, again, a husband's going to go ahead and divorce by Mishum Shem. Right? We tell him, Lo Yachzir, you can never remarry this woman. You can never remarry this woman. Just know that. Mishum Neder, similarly, again, if he divorces his wife because of a Neder, suppose the case of the Neder also is she makes some kind of vow that upsets the husband. She makes some kind of vow that upsets the husband, and he's divorcing her because of the vow. Then what? Then Lamais, again, we say that if you change your mind, you can't go ahead, or somehow she gets the vow annulled or revoked, so you can't remarry her. So the Gemara says, Shalach le Rabba bar Huna le Rabba bar Rav Nachman. Yilamdino Rabbeinu, Rabbi, teach us. Kines, so let's take it in these cases. Let's take this case. So Yaakov is married to Leah, divorces Leah because of Shemra. Then he decides he wants to go and remarry her. Not only does he decide, but what? He remarries her. Now, obviously, he's not allowed to do so, but he remarried her. Mahu Sheyotzi, do we go ahead and force him to divorce her? So again, we'll say, again, Leah didn't subsequently marry anyone else. Yaakov divorced Leah. He had a change of heart, or whatever it is. He found the rumors that he knows what the rabbis at the Beis Din told him, that he's not allowed to remarry, but he remarried her anyway. So do we force them to divorce? Amrle, Tanina, we learn this. Hanitan al ishes ishvotzi uamitachas yado. Afa pishakines yotzi. We learn this case, that if a woman is suspected of adultery and husband number one divorces her, and she marries the alleged adulterer, they have to divorce, right? So again, they have to divorce. So Amalei, so he said to him, bless you, me dummy, are those cases really comparable? Hasam hotzi'uha v'hachi hotzia. First of all, in the case of adultery, that's a case, as it's already in the Mishnah, that's why. Who's mandating the divorce from husband number one? The Beis Din, as opposed to the case we just said before over here of the Shemra, that's where the husband is divorcing the wife of his own volition. V'rabba, So we'll say, and apparently in Rabba Bar Rav Nachman's version of the Mishnah, it didn't say Hotziuha, but rather it also said Hotzia. Okay, so that's not a kasha. Tanan, Hotzia Tanan. But still the two cases comparable. Hachabal, Hassam Boel. In the case of the Mishnah, remember, who is the woman marrying after she goes in and divorces husband number one, right? Or her husband. Who is she marrying? She's marrying the alleged adulterer. In this case over here that we just quoted, who is the wife marrying? She's remarrying her original husband. Amrle Shapir Dami, still the comparison works. Shapir Dami Ahadadi, Hacha Amra Abana Lo Yichnos, Vim Kines Lo Yotzi. So too, it's just like over here. The rabbi said that she may not marry the alleged adulterer, bless you, in the Mishnah. And if she did, ultimately they have to divorce. Hachanami, so too in the case that we just stated above, Amra Abana Lo Yachzir. The rabbi said that if the husband divorced his wife because of Shemra, he may not remarry her, and therefore we would assume the imkines yotzi velohi. Still, it's not a good comparison. Hasam alume amalakala. You know the reason by the adultery case. Why is it that after husband number one divorces his wife, she can't marry the alleged adulterer? Why don't we let her do that? Because that lends credence to the rumor. Because ultimately, that strengthens the rumor that something actually did occur between this man and this woman. Ha-ha. But in the case of where the husband remarries the wife he divorced because of Shemra, what will we say? Ha-ha aminan kem be bekala. Here we would say that lamaisa what? That lamaisa, that Lamaisa, he found out about the kol, and he found out that the kol was not true, and that's why he decided to remarry her. Okay, so also, you should know, halacha Lamaisa, the Rambam Paskins, Shulchan Paskins, like this, that they said that if a man does indeed divorce his wife because of Shemra, or because of Neder, and we'll qualify the case of Neder, actually the next Mishnah a little bit, that Lamaisa, he does not have the right to go ahead and remarry her. He does not have the right to remarry her, out of fear that that may lead to ultimately retroactive nullification of the get, which if she remarried and has children from a second marriage, would be disastrous for her children. Says the Mishnah, Hamevi get medina sayam. Someone brings a get from overseas. The Amra, I will say, is actually very interesting. These sugyas are very interesting also because, as you can see, we're drawing on a lot of different halachas. Really fascinating. Hamevi get medina sayam. So someone brings a get from overseas. The Amar, befanai nechtav u befanai nechtav. So we'll say this takes us back a long time because our first masech that we did in Amud Yomi was Gittin. So we're going back now about 11 years when we did Baruch Hashem Gittin. So remember again, one of the first sugyas in Gittin is that a get has to be written l'shma. A get has to be written for the sake of a particular man and for the sake of a particular woman. So the Gemara discusses that outside of Eretz Yisrael, there was always a concern that they were not bekiyin l'shma, bekiyin b'shma. They were not versed in the laws of writing a get l'shma. Therefore, the rabbis instituted that if you bring a get from a husband from overseas, a witness must testify befanei nechtav or befanei nechtam. The get was written and was signed in front of me, which essentially is how the witness attests to the fact that the get was written in the Shema. If you bring a get written in Eretz Yisrael within Eretz Yisrael, or even if you bring a get from Eretz Yisrael outside Eretz Yisrael, you do not have to say b'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam, because in Eretz Yisrael we know that they are bekiyin in the Shema. So therefore, this is a fascinating case. Someone brings a get from overseas and he says b'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam. Wonderful. So what happens? So we'll say the guys are just a shliach. We'll call him Reuven. So Reuven is a shaliach. Yaakov is divorcing his wife Leah. Reuven is Yaakov's shaliach to bring the get. So what happens? So now the divorce is final. Lo yisa es ishto. So Reuven, the shaliach, may not marry the divorcee, may not marry Leah. I will say, so why not? Rashi says over here, lo yisas ishto, hoil va'adiburi samchini. Because I will say, essentially, because it is Reuven whose testimony allows the divorce to actually occur, there's a concern that what? That if we allow him to marry the divorcee, maybe he's lying. Maybe he's lying, right? Maybe there's no guess. Maybe there's nothing. Meaning, the whole testimony rides on him. If he then marries her, that kind of casts a cloud over his testimony. Okay. So the Gemara next. Lo yisishto mace. If a man comes along and testifies about another individual, another man. So again, Reuven comes along and testifies that Shimon died. Which, now remember, Shimon is married to Leah. Or haraktiv. Or Reuven says, I killed Shimon. Or haragnuhu. Or we killed Shimon. The halacha is lo yisa es ishto. So we'll say in this case, so Reuven may not go ahead and marry Shimon's widow. May not marry Shimon's widow. I will say again, remember, the halacha is that a woman is permitted to remarry on the basis of the testimony of one individual. So if a man comes along and says, I saw that your husband died, or again, we'll have to qualify this case, but I killed your husband, or we killed your husband. So remember again, she is permitted to remarry based on the testimony of this one individual. We do not let her marry this individual because Lamaisa, again, they could easily set up a situation where he's lying in order to be able to marry this woman. Rashi says over here, Meis haraktiv hargunu lo yise ishto, hova ale duso hinise. Since through his testimony she's able to remarry, ika lazu svasaim shema inam nasanba. Maybe again Reuven, the witness, set his eyes on this woman. Vehayit sheker, maybe he's lying. Avala acher tina say the isha nises beedech. Both it was very important. So Reuven's testimony will not work to what? To allow him to marry Shimon's widow, but it will work to do what? To allow Shimon's widow to marry someone else. Okay. On the other hand, Rabbi Huda says, Haraktiv lo tinase ishto. Rabbi Huda says, no. If Reuven comes along and testifies that what? I killed Shimon. Rabbi Huda says, Lamaisa, he's not believed to allow her to marry anyone. Why? Because if he's saying he killed someone, he's a Rasha. if he's a Rasha, then ultimately his testimony is not believed. Rashi says, Rabbi Yehuda Mar Harakti Vlotinasa Yishto, Afilu La'acher Apiv, Lefishu Mesim Atzmo Rasha, Vatora Amra Tashis Rasha. So he says, I mean, this is what he's talking about. If Reuven comes along and testifies that he killed Shimon, forget about marriage, he's not believed at all because he's a Rasha. However, Har Gunuhu, but if Reuven testifies, we killed Shimon, and we'll define this case, then Tinasa Yishto. Then Rabbi Yehuda agrees, she may not marry Reuven, the aid, but she is permitted to what? She's permitted to marry someone else, says the Gemara. Taima de Medina Sayam da'alea kasam chinam. The reason in the first case where Reuven comes along and testifies before Nechtam that he's not permitted to marry Shimon's divorcee is why? Because Lemaisa, the entire effectiveness of the divorce rests on his words, rests on his testimony. So because of that, again, it's a conflict of interest if then he would go ahead and marry the woman and would cast doubts upon the authenticity of his testimony. But apparently, again, if he was bringing the get in Eretz Yisrael, what Rabbi say? He does not have to say b'fanechtam, and therefore what Lamaisa, he's just an agent. He's just a delivery boy. And if he's a delivery boy, again, the effectiveness of the divorce does not rest on his shoulders, then maybe Lamaisa should be able to go ahead and marry Shimon's divorcee. Aye, but Vahames Dilav Ale Kasamchinan. But Abbas, it's actually very interesting. But let's fast forward a little bit in the Mishnah. In the case of where Reuven shows up and testifies in Beis Din that Shimon died. So the Gemara says, now Leah, the widow, is going to get remarried. Her ability to get remarried is not based on Reuven's testimony. Now, what does that mean? The Amar Mar, Ish Adaiko Min Saba, a woman investigates and gets remarried. We'll say, listen to this. This is fascinating. We just said, Reuven shows up in Beis Din, and Reuven says, Shimon dies. What's the halacha? So the halacha is that when it comes to situations like this, we believe one witness. The Gemara says, it's not really true. We don't believe one witness. There's no such concept of believing one witness. Right? How many witnesses do you need in order to create effective eidos? Two. So what's happening over here? That we believe that when the one witness comes along and says that that Shimon's widow, we'll call her Leah, is going to do a thorough investigation. She is going to do her due diligence. Why is she going to do her due diligence? Because most of she's going to get remarried, she knows that she runs the risk that what? That if Reuven comes home and says, surprise, honey, I'm home, right? And he finds Levi and, you know, five beautiful little kinderlach running around the house, but they're just not his, right? Then what? Again, she runs the risk of, first of all, being labeled an adulteress, inadvertent, but still an adulteress. And more importantly, for our purposes now, her children mamzerim. So therefore, the Gemara suggests over here that when one witness comes along, we're not really relying on one witness, because halachically, you can't rely on one witness. We're relying on the fact that one witness now encourages the woman to launch a thorough investigative process that will tell her whether or not she can get remarried or not. And therefore, again, so therefore, even when Reuven shows up and says that Shimon died, it's not really dependent on Reuven's testimony. And yet what? V'katanin lo yises ishto. And yet what? And yet the Mishnah still says, even when the testimony is not dependent on him, or the ability for her to take action is not dependent on him, he still can't marry her. To which the Gemara says, you can't really compare the cases. Hasam leka ksava, hacha ika ksava. But so here's the difference. In the case where Reuven shows up and says that Shimon died, there's no document, there's no other supporting proof except the fact that what? That Reuven says that it occurred. So as much as we're saying that the effectiveness of the testimony does not rest on Reuven's shoulders, it's not totally true. It does rest a little bit on Reuven's shoulders, even though at the end of the day, Leah won't get remarried until she investigates herself. The process is sparked by Reuven's statement in Beis Din. However, Hacha, Ika Ksava. But here in the case of the get, there is mamish get, meaning even if Reuven says nothing, at the end of the day, there is a document that points to the fact that Shimon is divorcing his wife. And therefore, the Gemara says, "Disnan ma bein get lemisa." What is there to think when a witness comes bearing a get versus when he comes testifying that the husband died? Shaksa mochiach. So when he comes with a get, he's coming with what? He's coming with an actual document, with actual proof. So therefore, what the Gemara is saying is like this: the Gemara has just proven is the only time that he could remarry with the get case. The only time he could marry the divorcee in the get case is when he's bringing a get within Eretz Yisrael. Because within Eretz Yisrael, there is no need for the shaliach, for the agent to testify about the lishma aspect of the get. Therefore, really, all he is, he's FedEx. He's UPS. He's not, right? He's the postal service. He's not really an effect. He's not a necessary cog in this process. Therefore, lemaisa, again, he can marry the divorcee. But in any case where what the man is saying has a bearing upon her status, so meaning he shows up and he says, your husband died, even though it's not going to totally rest on his shoulders, but he sparks that process, or he delivers a get from chutz la'aretz, and he says, b'fanechtam, and he needs to say that in order for the get to be effective, he may not marry the divorcee. See, or he may not marry the widow. The Gemara goes weiter. Mace, haraktiv, hargnu lo yiseis ishto. If Reuven shows up and says, Shimon died, I killed him, or we killed him, so that he may not marry the widow. She can marry someone else, but he may not marry the widow. So the Gemara says, "Who knew dilo yisa es ishto hala achartinase?" What we can infer from this Mishnah is Reuven, the guy giving testimony, may not marry her, but what? Based on the testimony, she is free to marry someone else. I v'hamar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef, listen to this. Rav Yosef said, "Ploni rivaani laonsi." If let's say a man says, Reuven says, Shimon sodomized me. Shimon violated me. Shimon sodomized me, lone si, meaning against my will. So the Gemara says, who va'achem it starf in the hargo? Then ultimately again, so Reuven, the victim, and another person could combine against Shimon to be two witnesses to ultimately have him executed. Rush, so however, if he says, lirtsoni, if Reuven testified that Shimon sodomized me, but I was compliant, I was willing, then the Gemara says Rashahu. Then ultimately Reuven himself is a Rasha because he engaged in this act willingly. V'hatora amra al tashas yadcha im Rasha lios eid chamas. And the Torah says that someone who is a Rasha may not be a witness. So what I see what the kash is. The kash is if Reuven showing up and says, I killed Shimon, so how can you even listen to his testimony at all? He's a Rasha. And therefore, the testimony of a Rasha is halachically irrelevant. So maybe you'll say that when it comes to testifying about a woman's marital status, we're megal. And I will say, that is true. That when it comes to situations regarding whether or not the woman's husband is alive or dead, we are very megal. We relax the laws of Eidos all the time to avoid aguna circumstances. Maybe we'll say over here, maybe we even accept the testimony of a Rasha. So the mamish, the guy says, I killed your husband, we still accept that. V'hamar Abnasha, but Abnasha said, Amadeus, Gazlan de Divrayim, Rabbi say, if a person is a Gazlan de Divrayim means a rabbinic thief. Rabbi say, what does that mean? That doesn't mean a rabbi who's a thief, right? Gazlan de Divrayim means someone who is engaged in rabbinic theft. Rabbi say, what's an example of rabbinic theft? Rashi says, Kigon mafri chayon misachi bekuvia. Gamblers. So we'll say a gambler is considered to be a thief, but he's not a biblical thief, because a biblical thief means I walk into your house and I steal your 57-inch plasma television. You know, that's a biblical thief. A rabbinic thief ultimately again is someone who for example, gambling. The problem with gambling, Rabbi Osei, is what? Besides the fact that the Gemara says that gamblers do not contribute, they do not give anything to Yeshuva Shalom, they contribute nothing to society. But more than that, it is theft. Why? Because Rabbi Osei, whenever somebody gambles, no one puts their money in the pot, what? With the expectation to lose, right? Everybody wants to win, which means that when I win, and I take other people's money, I'm really taking that, they really don't want to part with that money. As such, again, it's quasi-theft. So, Gazlan de Devrayim, Kasher le'ed de Sisha. So a rabbinic thief, a rabbinic thief is kosher to give edus for an isha, which also means edus isha is, let's say, he is kosher to say, I saw that Rachel's husband died. Gazan the divrei Torah pasul edus, but a biblical thief is not permitted to go ahead and give edus. So what do you see from here? You see that somebody who has violated biblical law cannot give edus. Therefore, again, if Reuven showing up and said, I killed Shimon, how can you possibly accept this testimony? So the Gemara says, I'm sorry. The Divrei Torah Apostle Idisisha. Name Rav Menashe, Dharmak Rav Yehuda. So say that Rav Menashe holds like Rav Yehuda. Also remember, Rav Menashe is saying that a thief who has violated biblical law would not be believed to give testimony. So therefore, also that was what Rav Yehuda was saying in the Mishnah. Rav Yehuda said that if Reuven shows up and says, Haraktiv, I killed him, then Lamaisik, and we don't believe him. To which the Gemara says, Amalek Rav Menashe, not true. My position is even in context of the Rabbanan. Why? The time of the Rabbanan, hacha kidrava. Both say, why is it that the Rabbanan and the Mishnah accept the testimony of a guy who says, right? Reuven shows up and says, I killed Shimon. So the Rabbanan seem to say that we accept his testimony. We don't let him marry the widow, but we accept his testimony vis-a-vis the Isha. But no, because the Rabbanan over here hold like Rava. The Amar Rava. Adam Karov, listen to this. Adam Karov Esau Atzmo. Abosai, a person is related to himself. The Ein Adam Mesim Atzmo Rasha. And therefore what? And therefore a person may not go ahead and make himself into a Rasha. Abosai, this is amazing. Right? That what? Rava says like this. You know, the halach is that Krovim cannot testify about each other. I can't testify about my brother can't testify about me. So Rava says, a person is a Karov to himself. I'm related to myself, and therefore, I am not permitted to give damaging testimony about myself. Ein adam mesim es atzmo rasha. A person can't make himself to Rasha. Therefore, again, essentially, this is fascinating. The Gemara is suggesting that according to the Rabbanan, when Reuven shows up in Beis Din and says what? I killed Shimon. Shabbosai, we split that testimony into two pieces. That testimony tells us two things. What does it tell us? Number one, that Reuven killed Shimon. Number two, Shimon's dead. I accept Reuven's testimony to say that Shimon's dead. What don't I accept? I don't accept the fact that Reuven actually killed Shimon. Why? Because I can't believe something that Reuven says that condemns himself. So it's fascinating. So Menashe says the halacha is that a person who has violated biblical law is not kasher le'edus. But it's almost like in order for that to be true, what has to happen? I have to have independent corroboration of that fact from some other source than what? Than the violator himself. But if my only source of the fact that this person is a violator, is a perpetrator, is the fact that he said it, I don't believe someone's negative testimony about themselves. So say that Rav Yosef holds like Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, my position is even conformed to Rabbanon. The shiny edus the isha and the edus of woman is separate. The akilu bar Rabbanon, because ultimately again the rabbis were mekel. Rav Menashe the amrik Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Menashe himself holds the Rabbi Yehuda. So we'll say what comes out is something truly fascinating. What comes out over here is the ma'isa like this: that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda will simply hold that at the end of the day, Lemaisa, if he comes along and says that I went ahead and I killed Reuven, so again, we can't accept his testimony. Why? Because he's admitting to the fact that he's violated biblical law. And therefore, Lemaisa, once he's admitted that, again, we can't accept his testimony. Therefore, again, we can't accept his testimony for himself, we can't accept his testimony, and therefore she can't remarry anyone based on that. The Rabbanan say, no, not true. Essentially, palginan dibure, we split his words. When he shows up and says, I killed Reuven, only thing we here is what? Is Reuven is dead. Now, how could we do that? Because remember, we always relax the standards whenever it comes to matters of testimony regarding a woman's marital status. So we split his words. All we hear is that Reuven is dead, but Lemaisa, all we hear is that Shimon is dead, but the fact that Reuven killed him, that Lemaisa we don't hear. All right, we'll stop over here. Well, the Mirat Hashem pick up here tomorrow. Tomorrow's a short daf. Tomorrow, I'm going to be the short, so hopefully we'll get through it.